Basic training, how to teach your kids to work. Join me, Dr. Thomas Lamar, on this episode of Christian Heritage on Air, as we welcome the no-nonsense approach of homeschool father, missionary, and serial entrepreneur, Mr. Dave Tucker, to explain the 12 keys to getting from A to Z in raising children who will be productive servants of Jesus Christ. For more information, visit ChristianHeritageOnAir.com. Christian Heritage on Air is a production of Christian Home Educators of Washington. This webinar recorded on November 19th, 2013. My name is Dr. Thomas Lamar. I'm a homeschooling father of seven, chiropractor by trade, a guy who loves to podcast, and your host for Christian Heritage on Air, a program which looks to encourage, teach, and inspire you with biblical vision for your family and the home education process. And welcome once again, everybody. Dr. Thomas Lamar with you for Christian Heritage on Air. So glad to have you join us. Coming up on this episode of Christian Heritage on Air, how to teach your kids to work. Mr. Dave Tucker joins us later on in the program to address this very important topic, and I'm looking forward to having that conversation with him, as well as having him field your questions. So if you're joining us live tonight, thank you for that, and make sure you send those questions to us via the chat box as our program gets underway here, and we'll address those a little later on. Well, the first annual Christian Heritage Family Economic and Mentorship Conference held in Ocean Shores, Washington, is now in the history books. It's hard to believe it was a month ago. And, you know, from my perspective, what an incredible time it was. Great teaching, rich fellowship, and a time to catch and to cast vision for our family when it comes to integrating and moving towards a family economy. You know, my wife and I, we really enjoyed ourselves and count it as a weekend well spent. I had a chance to grab my Christian Heritage on Air microphone and go man on the street, or rather a man on the conference floor, to chat with some of the attendees to get their take. And I'm going to be playing that piece in just a moment. But, you know, something that was really was a common thread in my conversations, and not necessarily something I emphasized in the final production of the piece, was that this was new territory for Christian Heritage. And so most of us, myself included, you know, didn't really know what to expect. You know, certainly our last two Christian Heritage on Air episodes gave us some idea, which, by the way, both were excellent, if I do say so myself. One was with Kevin Swanson on how to reintegrate the 21st century family in work and provision, and the other on four steps to a life-changing mentorship with Steve Riddell and Daniel Craig. You can find those in the archives over at ChristianHeritageOnAir.com if you didn't have a chance to catch those, or perhaps want to listen again, or maybe even share them with a friend. But yeah, you know, most of us didn't have much in the way of expectation when it came to the Family Economics and Mentorship Conference. I can tell you personally, I was expecting to hear a lot of, a lot of nuts and bolts about running a business, like marketing and website tips and tricks and that sort of thing. And certainly that was present at the conference, there's no doubt. But the overwhelming theme that undergirded the whole weekend, and what really drove all the teaching, was what Kevin Swanson said right at the beginning. He said, "Nothing else about this weekend matters unless we get this right. It all begins with the fear of the Lord." And that was so refreshing to hear. And so while the conference certainly had a lot of the how-tos, there was also a lot of the why-tos. It was about the proper headspace when it comes to a family economy, and more importantly, the proper heart space. Let's go ahead right now and play our Man on the Street segment from that weekend. If we could just get that right up, here we go. Hi, this is Dr. Thomas Lamar for Christian Heritage on Air, and we are standing in front of the Ocean Shores Convention Center here at the Family Economics and Mentorship Conference for Christian Heritage. And inside that conference center, over 1,000 people are learning about the family-based economy and how to run that for the glory of God. So we took our Man on the Street microphone in to find out more. What do you think God is doing here?
It covers an area that at Christian Heritage we haven't dealt with as near as much, and the whole aspect of how does a family function economically as a family and honor God through it too.
Jeff, this is the Family Economics Conference. Tell us your first impression.
first impression has been that we've got a lot of good vision here for both the spiritual and the practical sides of this, and really the implications for what this country needs.
The interaction alone with other believers and other people with the same vision for their families is inspiring.
I've gotten an idea and maybe more of a vision for starting my own family and building a greater vision off of the vision that we already have.
Without an economy, a family doesn't survive. Whether that's a little economy or a big economy, we all have to have one.
People are building their own family economies. They're getting debt-free. God is blessing their businesses and their families in various ways. We want to know how they're raising their children, how they're discipling them, how they're preparing them for marriage, whether or not they're moving more towards college corporate track or the entrepreneurial track. These things we think are important in establishing a movement.
The Bible is very clear that the love of money is the root of all evil. However, it also says that all labor there is profit. And money itself is not evil. Profit is not evil. But we don't have it as an idol. But it is a necessity of life to have a good existence and to live.
We want to be able to figure this out so that we can not only provide for our own family, but also use that to be a blessing and an encouragement to others. Be able to give back and be able to serve people in the name of Christ.
And I think as a church, as a body, we have an opportunity. It's shifting. And we want to be on that shift that God is doing. Revival when it comes to discipling, mentoring, and the families get to be a part of that.
Okay, where do we start again? Honey, what's my vision? How do we do this? And yet we know we're all in this together, and we're getting incredible teaching.
All of us are kind of different places, so I think part of that is fine-tuning your own understanding of God's plan in your family. And putting it into action.
True economy in the home, in the Christian home, has nothing to do with money, and it has everything to do with the kingdom of God. And again, that put it into perspective.
So you traveled 7+ hours to get here. Worth the trip?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Look forward to doing it again.
For more information on Christian Heritage and the Family Economics Mentorship Conference, visit them on the internet at christianheritageonline.org. And we're back live now. You know, we've got that 3-minute audio montage on the ChristianHeritageOnAir.com website, and the video is in production as I speak. So please go share those with your social media circles and help us get the word out. From a conference attendee, inspiring, motivating, enriching. These words only begin to describe my experience at the Family Economics Conference. Those in attendance range from entrepreneurs to prospective business owners, children to employees, and all of with whom I spoke agreed. The vision for family economies communicated at this conference was powerful and life-changing. It is a message that all who live in this day and age need to hear. Wow. Before I welcome Dave Tucker onto the program to talk about a topic that fits very well under the domain of family economies, I want to go ahead and pull our producer, Daniel Craig, out onto the center stage with me right now. Danny, go ahead and switch your microphone on. Hello, Danny.
All right, I'm here.
There you are. Welcome, Danny. Hey, where are you producing the show from this evening?
All right, actually, I am here in Spokane, Washington.
Oh, so that's pretty unusual.
I managed to do this one from the right state. Yep. Well, it's good to be in Washington.
Now, you know, I don't know if our listeners and viewers are aware of this, but Danny wears a lot of hats for Christian Heritage. You know, making me sound good is but one of the many. And so with regards to the Family Economics and Mentorship Conference, on behalf of Christian Heritage, which teamed with Generations with Vision, Danny did the majority of the heavy lifting behind the scenes to get this conference off the ground. And Danny, you know, all I can say is you hit it out of the ballpark, man. Good job.
Well, you know what? My number one takeaway from the conference was, wow, the Lord really blessed this event. It was definitely a privilege to be involved. And honestly, I did have the title of coordinator, but there were a lot of other people making sure everything held together. So, yep, the Lord did really bless the weekend.
It was a phenomenal weekend. Over 1,000 in attendance. What was your general take? I know you just kind of said some of it, but as the coordinator, give us kind of your breakdown of how it went.
I think one of the most exciting things with the Family Economics Conference may have even been before the conference actually took place, and that was to see everyone else's excitement with the conference and their excitement and anticipation of this specific topic. Honestly, when we decided to do the conference, we were thinking to ourselves, man, you know, do people even really know what we mean by family economics? And is this really going to be scratching an itch that people actually have? And we launched the registration. And for a few months at the beginning of the year, the Family Economics Conference was outselling our annual homeschool conference. So there was a lot of excitement out of the gate. And then I think we ended up filling up about 6 weeks ahead of the conference itself. So there was a lot of excitement coming into the event. And then that certainly carried through within the event itself. I think that probably a big takeaway, and I observed this from looking at the feedback from the audience response units, is that this was the perfect audience and the perfect time for this conference, where everyone really already kind of had the family discipleship vision coming into the conference, but they were thinking to themselves, okay, what's next? What are we actually discipling for? What's the end goal of all of this? And of course, that was a big objective of the conference, was to answer that question. And I think a lot of people came away with a clear understanding of the big picture and why we talk about discipleship at Christian Heritage.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. You said something and kind of brushed over it like it was, you know, of course, but the audience responder units, tell us a little bit more about that, because that's the first time I've ever been to any sort of conference that involved that kind of audience participation.
Well, that was another way the Lord worked. I had an email come into my inbox from somebody who said, you know, I have a friend who does these audience response units, which are basically little units that they pass out throughout the audience. And we get real-time feedback from a live question and answer session. And this gentleman that emailed me said, I think I can get a contact for you of someone that might be interested in coming out. And so I touched base with this other gentleman who ended up coming out to the Family Economics Conference and brought all his units with him. And it was a really neat opportunity for everybody at the conference to understand where everybody else was coming from and kind of get a sense of where we are as a movement, as a group of families pursuing the same vision. And I think it brought a lot of camaraderie and interest to the keynote sessions as well. And we hope to use that data over the years where we can mark where we started and how we've progressed as families and moving towards accomplishing some of the things that were talked about at the conference. So I think people enjoyed it. I certainly enjoyed seeing the feedback come in, and knowing that 3% of families flew in with Mary Poppins was probably one of the most exciting pieces of information. It was a toss up between that and the 2% who are living out on the streets. So
yeah, it was really memorable. And, probably one of the more interesting questions was the question about who plans on attending the pizza party. Let's talk about the pizza party, because this, Danny, somehow you pulled off the largest pizza party I have ever attended.
That was really fun. And it was more because I had no idea what I was doing that it actually happened. We had this idea of doing a pizza party, and if I had known what I was getting myself into, I probably wouldn't have done it. But we showed up at the facility, and the people at the facility had a chef brought in to help us coordinate this pizza party. They basically said, this is going to be a massive deal, and if you guys don't do it right, it's going to be a total fiasco. So we brought in our chefs. We're going to run this pizza party for you. And we ended up serving about 200 pizzas plus salad and salad dressing to about 700 to 800 people. And it was just a neat time of fellowship where people were able to kind of digest, I think, a little bit of what they had heard and bounce some ideas that maybe had come to their mind after the conference with other people that were at the conference. And it was a real special time.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it was a time for fellowship. And so often we go to these big events and we see people that, you know, oh, hey, how are you doing? But you don't have enough time to really sit down and talk to them. And this party really allowed that to happen. So I know a lot of people really enjoyed that, and I'm looking forward to the next pizza party.
Sounds good. Yeah. Well, we're going to try to make a little bit more time in the schedule for the this kind of fellowship at the annual conference in April. So people can look for more of that to come.
Wonderful. And speaking of, you know, the future, and what does next year hold for a similar kind of conference?
Well, I don't know that I'm supposed to say anything official, but unofficially, we're definitely reconsidering doing something again in the fall, and there will be more about that in the future. So definitely keep October open. That's about all I should say.
Okay, fair enough. For those of you that that attended, and for those of you that wish you would have attended, the recordings of the conference are now available. Do you want to go ahead and talk about that real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. So we decided to do the sales for the audio as a bundle this year. And basically, you can get all 26 messages from the conference for $79 on MP3 download format. Just go to ChristianHeritageOnline.org and go to our store, and you can download that immediately. It's something like $3 a message. So very affordable if you're looking for some life-changing vision as you plan and prepare for moving forward as a family in the next year.
Absolutely. And it's a great way, and you know, A, if you didn't go, you can hear it. And B, if you did go, you can relive it and review it. And certainly there was so much going on at any one time, it would be almost impossible, unless you have, you know, everybody kind of ferreted out, to actually attend every one of them. So this is a chance to hear those ones that you couldn't attend because you were in another session.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Hey, it's time to get to work. Thanks for coming on to give us your perspective, Danny. I'm going to put you back in your producer position. And I'm going to put my interviewer hat on, and we're going to get started here as I cue up the music. Okay, like I said, it's time to get to work. And more specifically, it's time for us to learn how to teach our kids to work as we gain practical and spiritual insights that will help us train our sons and daughters to enjoy labor and to become self-motivated, mature, diligent adults as they work heartily as to the Lord. And for that, we're joined by a gentleman who has a heart for mentoring and passing on what he has learned. It is my pleasure to welcome to Christian Heritage On Air, homeschool father, missionary, and serial entrepreneur, Mr. Dave Tucker. Mr. Tucker, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here with you all.
Excellent. Well, Mr. Tucker, Dave, first of all, we need to really address this, you know, on behalf of our audience and the folks at Christian Heritage. I just want to express how deeply sorry we are for the sudden and unexpected loss of your mother.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. And talking about that very subject and the subject of teaching your children to work, I think my mother was, for those who might not know, she passed away just a couple days before the conference. Otherwise, I would have been there with you all. But she was one of the hardest working people that I have ever met. And she certainly taught us to work very, very hard. And I think a lot of this, even this presentation, goes back to her and the lessons that I learned at her knees.
Wow, that's remarkable. Just to reiterate, our thoughts and prayers continue to be with you and your family through this time, and in many ways, we're very humbled to have you join us here tonight. I will say,
thank you very much.
You're welcome. I will say, Dave, that you certainly were missed at the conference. Many people were disappointed, but obviously they understood. But I will say this: that you were in the prayers of the 1,000+ in attendance.
Yeah, and myself and the rest of my siblings really felt that, and I thank you for that. There was a strength there that was just from the Lord, definitely from the Lord, and I could feel the prayers that were going. So I appreciate that very much, and that's what we are as a community, to uphold and help one another, and God knows the plans. We don't, but He does.
Praise God. Well, in honor of your mother, let's get to work. You have,
all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do this. You've given me a dozen talking points that will speak to this idea of teaching our kids to work. I'm going to walk you through each one of these and have you kind of flesh them out. And of course, for our live attendees tonight, make sure you type any question that you have in the chat box regarding kids and work, and we'll address those a little later on. But before we launch into these key points, Dave, let's ask the basic question that maybe someone listening might have. Why do I need to teach my kids to work? Isn't that something that they will just kind of do when it's required of them?
Oh boy, isn't that a great question? One of the biggest, in speaking from scripture and theology, which I really enjoy the philosophy of scripture and how it applies to our life, but speaking from scripture and theology, the world looks at work as a curse, as something that, we have to do this, and we live for the weekend and for the vacations and all that kind of stuff. But what we have to do is we go back to Genesis, go back to Genesis 1 and 2, and we find out that Adam was told to work before the fall, before sin, and it was his privilege to take care of the garden and to care for it and to have dominion over the earth. And that is so important. We have to teach our children that. Why do we have to teach them to work? Why do we have to teach them anything? Because they come out and they're sinful beings, and they have to be taught to look at God and His world and the creation through the biblical lens to attain true joy and true happiness, which only comes through Christ. And so if Christ, back at the beginning, when He created Adam and said, here you are, and here's a work that I want you to do, then our fulfillment and our joy is going to come through that and through obeying His commands. Just as the Westminster Catechism would say, what's the chief end of man? To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. And that's what we need to do. So that's why we have to teach Him to work.
Okay. That is a good foundation to start off of. And let's get into these 12 keys that you have. Key number one, I love this one actually, get them involved early when they are happy to help, but no help at all. Tell us more about that.
That's right. Well, I think we've all been in this situation, but when my oldest grandchild right now is 3 years old, and of course he wants to come out and he wants to help grandpa. And I did the same thing with my son, and we have, my wife and I have 5 children, 1 son and 4 daughters. And when they're no help at all, that's when they're really in your way, and you're concentrated on, and I think this is these are lessons that I've learned myself, and I'm not saying that I'm the perfect father in any way, but these are some of the lessons that I've learned. And when they're little like that and they want to help, they're anxious to help, that's when we tend to brush them aside, because you know what? When they try to sweep up the dust, or when they try to carry the plates, or when they try to help us out, in Scotty, my grandson's case, he was helping me do a home improvement project. And of course, his idea of helping was taking the screwdriver and punching holes in the insulation. And they're no help at all. You have to go back and fix the stuff that they're doing. But if that's the time when they are reaching out to you and saying, oh, I see what you're doing and I want to be a part of it. And if we brush them aside and say, you know, move out of the way and let me do this because it's taking me too long to have you. I think when we do that, what we're doing is we're teaching them to not enjoy work. And I think that's our number one, our first place where we have to take the time and think, you know what? There's a lot more at stake here than whether the dishes are getting done or the home improvement project is being finished or whatever it is that you're currently working on. Let's not be present focused. Let's have a long-term view of this and get them to enjoy this. And that's the foundation of what happens next.
Oh, that is so true. I mean, I can't think. There's been so many times when I've been working with my son thinking, oh, I could just do this so much faster. Can you move out of the way? But no, I mean, that's like you said, we have to have that long-term vision. So I totally I'm tracking with you there.
What are you trying? What are we really trying to do? And we're trying to get the child to get some fulfillment and feel accomplishment and feel a mentorship with us and a friendship with us to try to get this work and have it be a really fun and great and rewarding part of his life.
Absolutely. Key number two kind of falls right under this one, and that is to get them to help you in your chores and jobs around the house.
That's right. And I remember this with my son when he was just real small. I think he was probably about 4 years old at the time. And I was building a treehouse for him and his siblings. And I had him come with me. I said, you know, Davey, you're going to come and help Daddy. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that. And so I was putting in some nails into some plywood or some screws into some plywood. And I needed just the screws. And so I remember him, I gave him the box of screws, and I said, now, I want you to hand me a screw. Just hand me one of them. Hand me one screw. And, of course, you know, he's fumbling around, and he's trying to hand it to me. And then he would lose focus. I would put the screw in, and then he would lose focus. And I'd say, okay, hey, Davey, you're helping me. You know, try to, and this became a key to us, but I said, try to anticipate need. He's like, what do you mean by that? And I said, well, you see that I'm done screwing the screw in, so you anticipate, you think I'm going to give you this next screw, Daddy, and pay attention to what's going on. So it's just the little things like that. And of course, now he's got a family of his own, but he works with me, and he works with me right in here. And we talk about that day. We both remember it quite well. So find things that they're able to do. If he's able to pick a screw up and hand it to you, that's a great thing. If they're able to carry the dishes, then let them do that. If they're able, whatever they're able to do, but be on the lookout. Again, the point of the matter is not getting things done. The point of the matter is involving them in the doing of it so that they can learn. We so often get caught up in the present, get caught up in the things that have to be done, and we got to get them involved. So that's what I'm talking about with the chores. So find chores. What can they possibly do? And it's hard sometimes. My grandchildren come up to me, and I have to think, okay, what are they capable of doing? What can I put them to do? Oh, pick up some sticks and bring them over here. And so sometimes you make up jobs for them to do.
I love that idea of getting them to, you know, start to recognize and anticipate need. That's not something that I had thought of before. I have a hard time multitasking. My wife's putting notes in front of my face. We'll get back to that. Let's move on. You know, I'd imagine that there are some pretty strong and important principles behind this next one, so I'd like to unpack it a little bit. Number three, pay them commission, not allowance.
An allowance is if you look at our government and what's happening right now with Obamacare and welfare state and all these things, an allowance is telling your child, you deserve this because you're breathing. You deserve this money. As long as you can keep your heart pumping, you're going to get it. Versus a commission, and Dave Ramsey talks about this quite a bit, but versus a commission where you're doing this because this was an extra job. I wouldn't put a commission on every job that's being done because they're part of the family economy. They have to do some things together, but there are some things that can be extra. So make sure that they're working for something to get something else. And that ties work into rewards so well. And I think that's a place where we fall short quite often.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you are paying them allowance, they really kind of start to get into that pathological mindset that something's owed them.
Yeah, it's the entitlement mentality that we're fighting right now. And quite frankly, in the political realm, I'm scared of it. Mm-hmm. The more and more people that are coming up with this entitlement mentality, I'm not sure what that's going to do to us that try to remain being producers.
That's a good point. Key number four, challenge them to do more than they think they can.
Yeah, this is always big. Some of that, it can be in your work. It can be in other things as well. One of the things I did a lot with my son was went on bike rides. And we would challenge him. We did a bike ride one time. We're on the East Coast, so we did a bike ride once from Pittsburgh all the way down to Washington, D.C. area, back to where our home is. And that was at the end of that bike ride, it's like, wow, we can really do this. And you just keep on pushing and pushing on your children, showing them that they can do so much more than they think they can. The world tries to box us up and keep us down, and we need to just move out. I know that at one of the seminars for family economics, Eric Weir was talking about how he wants to take his sons, they're older now, but he wants to take his adolescent sons and just drop into a city that they haven't been before and find a job and start working. And that's not find a job in the newspaper, but just find a job and start working and have enough money for a steak dinner and a hotel room to stay at that night. Starting with zero. I think that's great. Like, what a challenge. I love it. And so I went up to him and I said, how do you plan on doing this? And he said, well, I'm going to go in and I'm going to talk to a bank or something and say, can we wash your windows? And he says, and my sons are going to wash windows. We're going to have enough money for a steak dinner in a hotel. And I think, you know, wow, cool. Let's do that. You know, and just show them that there are opportunities everywhere. And so challenge them. They can do a lot more than they think they can.
Wow. You're inspiring me. Hey, key number five, figure out what they want to do and what they are good at.
Yeah, this is so important. I think we as parents, we're the ones that have a little more experience under our belt. And we've been around the block a couple times and we can see where where people that are good at something, they have these talents and they fit. We don't all fit in the same jobs. We can't all do the same type of thing. So, for example, I think we really need to study. And again, this is taking a long view, but we really need to study our children and figure out what is your gift. I would use my oldest daughter as an example of that, Charity. She, as she was becoming a teenager, and as we started thinking about, okay, what do you want to do in life and things like that, what do you want to study and such, and she started saying, well, I think I'm going to study elementary ed. And we asked her, we said, why are you going to do that? And she says, well, that's what mom studied, and so that seemed, you know, right, and helped me in homeschooling later on and things like that. And we looked at her, and we studied her, and we said, you know what, Charity, you're hardly ever around small children. I mean, that's not where you tend to be, but where you are and where you do tend to be is organization. You just are a fantastic organizer. You take care of things. And even as an adolescent, I had such faith in her. I could just say, hey, I want you to take care of this whole project. We did mission trips and things like that. And I'd say, you're in charge of the mission trip. And I was totally confident that she would take care of it and she would do fine. So based on that, we were able to move her away from an elementary ed type of thought and more towards more of a business administration organization type of thing. And that really is where she shines. And it would have been very difficult for her to be in others. But we as a parent need to take the time to get to know our children. Who in the world is going to help them? I know most of our listeners and most of us, we would say, you know, don't send your kid to a public school and stuff like that. But you think about these guidance counselors that spend, what, an hour with the child and then tell him what he's going to do the rest of his life? That's crazy. That's why we do homeschool, so that we can be close to our children and we can figure out what it is. So find out what they are good at and then guide them into that and help them understand how that is something that they can turn into a family economy.
Love that one. This next one is huge. Praise them for their accomplishments.
Yeah, I like this a lot. We would do, again, with my son, we worked a lot outside. We live on 10 acres, and we'd always have a project going on. Usually on Saturday, all day Saturday, we'd be doing some kind of a project. And I made a point of bringing my wife out at the end of the day. And she's tired, and she doesn't really want to do this. But I said, you know, honey, this would be really good. Come on out here. Look and see what Davey and I have done. And she'd come out there and she'd look at it and I, you know, I'd tell her ahead of time, whoop it up. tell them how good it is. Tell them how neat it is. Tell them how much you're going to enjoy this. Tell them how much, et cetera, and so forth. And just, you know, again, that's not wrong. I mean, look at what God did as he created the world. He said, he looked at it and he said, this is good. This mm-hmm. is good. And we're not going to be proud about it. Not the wrong kind of pride, but the right kind of pride, and let them take a little bit of pride in their accomplishment and say, look at what you did. You did really well here. We're going to use this. We're going to do well with it. But make sure that you do that. Make sure that you, and it's really good to call the mom over, particularly with a son. Call the mom over and let the mom just talk about how great it is and how wonderful it is that happened.
I think that's so important, because it's so easy for us sometimes to get wrapped up in pointing out the negatives, you know, oh, what they could have done better or whatever. But if you can just take that moment to tell them what they did right and really focus on that, it just can be an incredible confidence booster.
Oh, yeah. You've got so many perfectionists. Be careful. Be careful if you're a perfectionist and you have a tendency of doing that. Shy away from that, because you've got to show them what they do. Look at how God treats us. God is our perfect example. And God treats us, you know, the wounded flax, the smoking. And he says, look at what you did well. When Elijah ran away from the huge victory that he had on Mount Carmel, and he runs away because he's scared of Jezebel, I think that's so touching. What does God do? Does God just hammer him and say, what are you doing? You're weird. You know, he doesn't. He feeds him. He gives him rest. And then he talks to him in a still small voice. That's where we got to be with our kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about what you said, you know, like taking that longer range vision. It actually, it kind of gets back to point number one. You know, get them involved early when they're happy to help, but no help at all. You know, if you just, you know, spent all your time talking about how your child was no help to you, that's not going to get him anywhere.
No, he's going to either feel useless and gravitate towards the computer games, which are, you know, there's a lot of jobs out there right now for computer game players. I'm very sarcastic. or he's just going to give up and say, you know, I can never do anything right. And really, do you want that, or do you want him to go into the whatever it is that he's doing, whether he's going to work for himself or not, but to have some confidence and be able to walk in there and say, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do well, and I'm going to do my best,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to look at the positive. So we have such power over our children. Just it's scary.
Yeah, do not underestimate it. I'm very interested to hear you talk about point number 7, get them to work for others, then discuss what happened.
Yeah, this helps if you have the opportunity to do so. And this is where you get into the family economy. I have done some presentations on why own a business and things like that. And one of the things that you can do when you own a business is you can bring legally and you're also able to physically, but you can bring your child into the business and then put them in the care of supervisors that you have put up. In the case of one of the examples I would talk about here is my son. When he was an adolescent, I told him to go out, and one of the things we had was a lawn maintenance company, and I said, go out and work with this other guy. And he would go out and he would work all day with him during the summers. And then he would come home at night and we would go on a bike ride together. And then we would talk about what happened. Okay, how did the man's name was JR. How did JR treat this situation? Okay, this situation happened with a customer and he did this or that. How is that right? How is that wrong? How did he, did he treat you? And sometimes, you know, none of us are perfect. So sometimes JR would treat him badly. And if he treated him badly or misjudged or something, then I walk through it and I say, okay, well, what would you do differently? What life lesson have you learned from this that you're going to be able to apply when you grow up? How are you going to manage a little bit better? And all this, again, taking more of a long-term view and saying, I'm preparing this guy to be able to manage, so it's necessary for him to do this. And let them work with somebody else. With my daughters, they work in the offices here with me, and we take the time. We drive a half hour into the office, and we take that time, the half hour in, the half hour out, to talk about what are you going to do, and then on the way back, how could you have been more productive, how could you have treated better, et cetera, and so forth. But it's very important that they do that, and if you own your own business, you're able to do that, whereas if you don't own your own business, it becomes a lot more difficult, but I'd still encourage you to go to the church and find a businessman or find somebody and say, I just want my child to go and work there with you just to learn how it is. I know we had a Christian man come over and build a garage for us one time. And again, my son was of the right age. And I asked him, I said, can my son work for you? Don't pay him. I just want him to learn the trade, learn what you're doing and be able to work with you. And the guy was a Christian and he had done some other work for us. And he said, sure. And at the end of the day, he did pay him. He paid him quite a bit of money. And, but that was a great learning experience, again, for my son to be able to learn from somebody else, not just dad.
Absolutely, yeah. Good point. This one kind of builds off that. Talk about life and how things affect other things. That's point number 8.
Right. And I think it's important for us to, again, be cognizant of what's going on around us. And Deuteronomy talks about how we are to talk about these things when we rise up, when we sit down, when we come in, when we go out, et cetera, at all times. So when we're there, we look around and we see somebody, for example, somebody begging on the side of the road. Well, what do you think is going on? What would be the Christian response to this? What do you think, if you were in his kind of situation, what do you think you would do? And how did this affect it? And other things, when they are working for somebody else and when they are doing other types of jobs and you're in contact with other people, say, okay, well, how did this type of management lead to this type of result? Or how do you think we can do this thing? And one of the kind of stupid things we did, but some of you might not know my different companies that I have, but one of them is a software company. We write business management software for landscapers. And one of the things we do is we mail out postcards. We used to do a lot more of that. Now most of it is email, but we used to mail out thousands and thousands of postcards. And so I'd bring them home and we'd sit around this table, whole family, and even up to the littlest kid, and we'd be addressing these, putting the address labels on the postcard and the postage and stacking them just right and all these kind of things. And I took the time to be able to tell them, look, this is what happens. We get this postcard, we send it out, somebody will get it, they will call this 800 number right here, then my salesman will answer their questions, eventually they might buy the software, then that money goes into the checking account, then eventually it makes it into ours, and that's where we eat. And explain the whole process to them, and that's why it's important for us to do this. And so being able to take your time, again, take a long-term view on this thing, and be able to take your time and show them that how the economy works, it's not that complicated, it's not that hard. But if we don't take the time to show that to them, they don't understand it. They are disconnected from the whole process and how this thing works. Let's give them confidence. Knowing something gives them confidence.
Absolutely. That's a great point. Key number 9, demystify jobs and chores. What do you mean by that?
Demystify. I love that. I sort of hammer these things into my kids all the time, but there are no big jobs in life. None. Not a single big job. They look at me like, huh, Dad? I say, for example, let's take at the, you know, a few years ago, what was the most complicated thing we had out there? It was probably the space shuttle. I said, you know, to build a space shuttle is a big job. And they're like, yeah. I say, no, it isn't really. Every single thing about the space shuttle all boils down to some small job that has to be done. Some small thing that you have to do. And then what you do is you string these small jobs all together, and now you have something that's big. Another saying that I like a lot, they say, simplicity is on the far side of complexity. Okay, what is that? Well, I love this concept, but the concept is if we look at, let's say, a shoe, and we say, okay, well, how hard can it be to make a shoe? And you think, well, it's not that hard. I see kind of how it's stitched together. I see kind of how it goes together. But then when you start understanding how a shoe is actually made, you go to a factory, you start understanding how leather is tanned, and then how do you make rubber, and how do we make thread, and how do we make a sewing machine, and how do we do all these other things, it becomes very complex very quickly. And you're like, oh, I guess making a shoe is a bit more complex than I thought it was. But after you've learned all those processes and you're able to make shoes and you put in your, as Malcolm Gladwell would talk about, his 10,000 hours, once you put in your 10,000 hours, now you look at the shoe and you say, okay, yeah, I can make a shoe. That's simple. I can do that. But see, true simplicity is on the far side of complexity. So demystify jobs. Let them see a job and say, for example, as they get older, if you're good with mechanics, look at it and say, can we change this water pump? Well, they'll start out with saying, what's a water pump? And you demystify it. Look, it's pretty simple. Look, it's just this and this and this, and this is the way it is. And bang, now it's simple. And teach them, because I think what it'll do in the long run is it will make them not afraid of doing new types of jobs, which really is important when you get into business.
Oh, that's good stuff. I mean, just being able to, you're really training them to think differently and to be able to demystify on their own.
Right. Absolutely. Simplify it. Life is simple. It's not that complicated. And particularly if we have the fear of God, because you've got the manual right in front of you.
Amen.
He says, be honest. Do it. Don't try to figure the whole thing out. Don't try to duck it. He says you will be blessed if you admit your mistakes. Do it. Let's just do it. So that's what I'm trying to get across with that.
Key number 10, get them to make real money as opposed to what? Monopoly money? What are we talking about here?
Right. Well, real money. I mean, I know that there are sometimes, and depending on your family economy where you can be, but I know that there are sometimes when you're paying your child to do chores, you might pay him a quarter, you know, 50 cents or something like that. I'm saying real money. I'm talking about more substantial type of income, something that will come. And of course, I'm going to gravitate towards the lawn maintenance side because that's a lot of what I do has to do with the whole, what we call the green industry, not as an environmental, but as in cutting grass.
Mm-hmm.
And get them to make real money. Once they start, you take a young person that's 8 or 9 years old, and you put them in a position that they can actually be productive to the point of making minimum wage or $8 or $9 an hour. That's big money to them when they start seeing that. And I'm reminded, I just met this young man. There's a young man that started coming to our church, and people told me about him a couple of weeks ago, and they said, hey, there's this young man, and he's got an iPad with him, and he's got these other things, and he's only 11 years old, and people are asking him and say, well, certainly your parents are giving you all this. And he's like, no. He has a lawn maintenance company. He's got 12 properties that he mows every week, and that gives him all the money that he needs to live and save and do what he needs to do. Talk about changing a person's life when they're 11 years old and they're starting to do work that actually produces, that actually is worth it. And I like to talk about to my children about how if you do something that is worth something to somebody, that's what they pay you from. So you're a blessing to them, and they're blessing you back with their income. And that's the way business works, and it works well. So you have this kid of 11 years old, and he's already understood it. My nephew, who started a lawn maintenance business when he was told by the church that he was going to have to raise $1,000 to go on this missions trip with me down to Mexico. And everybody else had to raise $500, but because he was young, they wanted him to raise the full amount because they didn't think he'd be as useful. Well, he looks at me and he says, Uncle Dave, what are we going to do? And what can I do? And I said, well, you can sit back and say, I can't do it and wait until next year, or you can start a lawn maintenance company, start mowing people's grass, and get the $1,000. And I said, you know what? If you do this when you're just 11, I think he was 11 years old at the time. I said, if you do this when you're 11, there will be no barrier in your life that you cannot overcome. That talking about a physical or financial type of barrier. And he did that. And he didn't only raise $1,000. I think he raised $2,500. The next year, he kept his lawn maintenance business going, and he sent his mom is a single mother and with five kids, and he sent his mom on a cruise. And now he's down in Richmond, and he's doing ministry work at the same time that he's running his lawn maintenance company back here in the Washington, D.C. area by having another kid do it for him. He's paying them. So he's actually absent managing the thing, and he doesn't even have a driver's license yet.
Oh, I love it. That's so great.
Why not? Right?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, you know, let's not hold them back if they can do it. Number 11, let's take advantage of teachable moments.
Yeah, those teachable moments, it kind of goes back to the other thing about take advantage or teach them about life by showing them information. But there are teachable moments that happen. Again, slow your life down. Stop being so busy. Stop thinking that life is about accomplishing. It is not. Life is more about teaching our children and leaving a legacy and being able to have an influence through generations. So the point of this one, teachable moments, would stop the car and look at something. You see something there, go ahead, take your time. Stop the car, look at it. Talk about how business works. I mean, one of the things we went to the family economics in Wheaton College in Chicago, and one of the things I did is I took my youngest daughter over to the American Doll store. I don't know if any of your listeners or you have been to one of those, but I looked at it and I thought, wow, somebody knew what they were doing with business. I mean, they've got this set up to just be the perfect place for girls to be of that age. And you can just see everything is set up just, and they hit the nail on the head. It was just so neat to see as a business. They even have a little place where you can take your doll and you can have tea, and they encourage fathers to take their daughters there, and they have these little conversation cards on the middle of the table which tell you, which give you questions to ask your daughter to try to create conversation, because they know that most most husbands or most fathers are going to be a little awkward sitting there at the table with a doll and, you know, having tea. You know? So
yes,
here are things that you can talk to your daughter about. And I'm just thinking, wow, somebody really thought this thing through. And so you take that teachable moment, and I showed my kids, and I'm like, look at this. Look at the business that was created here. What is the need? Where is the business? What is... And that is, I would also encourage you to, when you have visitors in your home, you ought to be given to hospitality. So when you have visitors in your home, ask them with your children in the room and participating in the conversation, say, okay, well, what do you do, or how do you work, or how do you provide for your family, or those types of leading questions, and you pick your own. But the idea that the person will now unpack, hey, this is what I do, and this is why what I do is important, and you can learn so much. This one man that was over, and he works in research, cancer research, and finds out that blood vessels are bigger on the way in than they're on the way out of a tumor, and that's where they can deposit this drug, and da-da-da-da-da. But it's really interesting when that happens. So whenever possible, however you're working, keep them working, even if they work for nothing, because it can lead to opportunities. So those are teachable moments also. It's like, hey, let's go over. Let's do this job, even though we're not going to get paid for it. And I've done a lot of those with my children, and then you teach them and you show them, look, we did this job for free. Now they have confidence in us. Now they asked us to do this other job, and they're actually paying you. Isn't that a nice thing? Not nice to wait. So those are the teachable moments that I'm talking about.
Excellent. The last key on the key ring here is instill vision.
Yes, instill vision. That's one of the biggest things. What in the world do you want to do with your life? And where do you want to go with this? And where do you think God is calling you to be? How are you going to work for the kingdom? And what is that going to do? And just instill some awesomely big vision. There's a lot of books that I enjoy reading and thinking about. And there's one called The Magic of Thinking Big. It's by David Schwartz. And it's a great book. And one of the first chapters it has is excusitis. And it talks about how you have 100,000 different excuses on why you can't do something. And the author goes through, David Schwartz goes through each one of those and tells you, hey, I'm too old, and Colonel Sanders didn't start his Kentucky Fried Chicken until he was, I think he was in early 70s when he started it. Or I'm too young, and then he talks about those kind of situations. But instill that vision. But more importantly, I mean, we are created in God's image, and we have been given the task of the ordained dominion. We have been given the task of being able to be God's representatives here on the earth, and to be able to dominate it and take care of it. And do these things. So what are you going to instill in your child? What kind of big vision are you going to give them that's going to lead them in the future? And one of the things I did with my son also, we did a lot of bike riding together. And one of the things I did with him was I said, you know what? Where are you going to be in 10 years? And this was back when he was 15 or so, or 14 or 15. And I said, where do you want to be in 10 years? Like, what do you mean, Dad? And I said, well, think about it. In 10 years, you'll be 25. What do you paint me a picture? Tell me what you want it to look like. And he's thinking, and he says, well, I guess I'd like to have a wife and maybe a kid and have a house. And so just a couple months ago, he turned 25, and I reminded him of that conversation we had. And I said, look at you. You've got a wife, and you've got a child, and you've got a house, and you're working. And now what are we going to do? And as a family, we actually have on the agenda right now to get back into it and to think about instilling a vision, not only for my children, but for us as a whole family unit. What would we want to do, even now that I have grown up children? Do we want to participate in anything together? Do we want to do something? And instill that vision, and instill the vision of multiple generations. Let's not stop with this one. Let's talk about how from here on it's going to be different. I think it was John Adams who said, I study war and politics so that my son can study business, so that my grandson can study art. And I just think we're missing that. We're missing that kind of mentality. to think forward and say, what are we going to do? Jonathan Edwards, if you study his family tree and the things that were produced from that, that's where we got to be. So what kind of vision are we going to instill in our child, particularly when it comes to work? Slow your life down. Take your time. You need to teach them to enjoy work, understanding that they're glorifying God through it.
Wow, this has been so helpful. You just gave us a plate full of gold nuggets. I'm looking so forward to going through these and re-listening to this podcast. And I can imagine that our listeners right now are feeling the same way. Before we start fielding questions from them, and I realize we're running a little late, so I apologize for our live attendees, but this is all good stuff. Tell us, Dave, what are you doing over at goalsforguys.com?
Oh, yeah, that's a great we started that. My son and I started the goalsforguys.com because I started mentoring some young people and start to try to teach them things that they haven't been taught about this type of thing, about life, about work, about all these kind of things. So it's a blog, and we write on it. Haven't written on it a ton, but we write on it a bit every once in a while, and just ideas of different things that you ought to pay attention to, like the importance of reliability, growing up, your legacy that you leave, and all these types of things. And I've heard some families have gotten back to me and said that they use it, and they read one with their son. In particular, it's for guys mainly, but they read it with their son and then talk about it. It gives them a sort of a launching place to have a discussion. So hopefully that's useful for the Goals for Guys. But yep, that's what that's for.
Give our audience ways that they can connect with you and keep up with you.
Well, they can. The Goals for Guys is one place you can go. You can certainly contact me via email anytime. It's Dave, D-A-V-E, at clip, C-L-I-P.com. dave@clip.com, and I'm available there. And then there, I have another website called Gideon's Strength. Gideon's Strength, which is about the mission type work that we do, gideonstrength.com. And then we also have I wrote a book, and based on this family business, I thought there was a need for a book on how to start, run, and succeed in lawn maintenance. And that you can get that from Amazon. We also have a website that follows that up called thebeautifulbusiness.com. The Beautiful Business. You got to go back to figuring out how to spell beautiful, but there it is. Thebeautifulbusiness.com. And that's right there. There's again, a place, a forum where we can discuss things and go through it. So if that interests you, check out the book and check out those websites.
Excellent. Okay. This is the part of the program where we take a quick commercial break. You'll be back with us in just a moment, Dave. And we're going to allow our live attendees to get their last-minute questions in for the Q&A session here with Dave Tucker. If you are catching this episode as a recording and are thinking to yourself, hey, I'd like to be part of the live recording too, you simply surf on over to ChristianHeritageOnAir.com and sign up. It's super easy and it's a lot of fun too. And get your calendars out and make sure you set aside April 24 through 26, 2014 for the 9th Annual Christian Heritage Family Discipleship and Homeschooling Conference to be held at Overlake Church in Redmond, Washington. The theme will be Steadfast in Hope. And the speaker lineup is one not to miss. Ken Ham, Marshall Foster, Kelly Crawford, R.C. Sproul Jr., Israel Wayne, and Scott Brown. Check out ChristianHeritageOnline.org for more information. Also, this will be the last Christian Heritage on Air for this year, 2013. We'll be back, though, for a 3-month back-to-back series starting on Tuesday, February 7th, 2014, to gear you up for the upcoming conference. And our theme for that series will be Raising Visionary Kids. Keep your eyes out for more information over at ChristianHeritageOnAir.com and plan on joining us live if your schedule permits. And then finally, I just want to remind you once again that the Family Economics and Mentorship Conference recordings are now available over at ChristianHeritageOnline.org for immediate download. You get all 26 sessions in MP3 format for the modest investment of $79. That's just about $3 per message. So go check those out. You'll be glad that you did. Okay, it's time for the Q&A with Dave Tucker on kids and work. Let's see what sort of questions are coming in. This one from Charlie. Excellent topic. Dave, you mentioned your son a lot in your talk. My question is, will the same 12 keys apply to daughters also?
Yes. In fact, I have four daughters and only one son. So, but as a father, of course, it's easier for me to train my son into how to work. But I also take my wife and I take a huge interest in our daughters and making them enjoy work and making them be able to shine in the talents that God has given them. And I could go through each one of my daughters and their different talents and the different things that they're going into, but we don't have time for that. But yes, absolutely.
Okay. This one just came in from Tara. Can you give some examples of jobs that would be recommended for a 2.5-year-old boy who is very active?
My grandson is 3 years old, so he's a little bit older than that, but he's been holding just little stupid things like holding the dustpan or carrying, I wouldn't give him plates to carry, but carrying towels from here to there. And you know what? When he gets to there, they're going to be messed up, and you know they're going to be messed up, but he can do it, and he's going to feel good. And don't tell him he messed up. Tell him what a good job he did of carrying them from here to there. Let him carry his clothes over and put them in his drawer. Little things like that. Just think about it. Look at him and say, what are you capable of and how can I push you just a little bit, but always be encouraging.
Hey, Dave, when it comes to jobs and you talked about, you know, let them make some real money. Do you tend to gravitate towards paying by the job or by the hour?
Oh, by the job. By the job. Paying by the job is so much more freeing to them. Because when I do that, I say, I will pay you to get this job done from here to there. And you know what? If you want my help on advice on how to get it done faster and better, et cetera, I will do that. But ultimately, in this world, when we pay by the hour, you're paying somebody to keep their heart pumping. And ultimately, in this world, we all pay for the job done. We don't pay by the hour, except for lawyers and some other people like right. that. But you doctor as a chiropractor, I pay mm-hmm. you to adjust my spine. I don't pay you to spend 20 minutes or an hour, right?
That's correct. Get on the table.
You're right. That's right. Breathe out.
Along those same lines, what kind of consequences have you successfully used for jobs left either undone or maybe jobs that were done very poorly?
Well, a lot of them are do-overs. In fact, just in the last few days, we had a situation where our youngest girls are not rinsing the dishes before they put them in the dishwasher. So my wife and I talk, I sit them down and I say, here's the problem. You girls come up with a way, and they don't like to be told punishment, but I say, come up with a way that's going to make you remember to rinse these dishes. And so we worked on it back and forth. And what we came up with was, if there's food in the bottom of the dishwasher because the plates haven't been rinsed right, then for the next 2 days, they're going to have to hand wash all the dishes. And it's not a big punishment. You don't have to be mad at anybody, but it's just a consequence. If you don't know how to use the dishwasher, then you'll do it by hand. And eventually you will learn and you will remember and everything's fine.
All right. That's some good stuff. This one from Julie. If I have a child who does chores but resists homework, is this related or unrelated?
Yes, it's related. I love these. There's some child rearing tapes called "How Not to Follow Up the Training of Your Children" by Al Martin. It's a great series. I highly recommend it. It was done a while back. I mean, as in 20 years ago. But it's out there and it's available. But it's very good. But he thunders across through the cassette tapes in the time. And he says, doing things you don't like to do develops character. And that's just it's in my head. But teach your child that, yes, he doesn't want to do homework. He'd rather be he's okay with doing chores, which is great, and honor him for that. But he has to do this homework. You know, things are never done until the paperwork's done. And I would say that that's got to be you've got to enforce that, because he has to learn his self-discipline to get through the stuff that is hard, the stuff that he doesn't want to do. And if he learns that, then that will be such a talent for him to have later on in life.
Dave,
don't cripple your children.
Dave, would you ever pay for schoolwork in this situation?
Wow, that's a great question. Probably for extra schoolwork if it actually had a value to me. So, for example, I would say, if you can, I need to figure this and this and this out. If you can figure that out for me, bring it to me, I'll figure it out, or chart it, or I can't come up with a great example of that, but something that would have a true value. I don't know that I would pay my child to do something that doesn't actually have a value, that's just a value for him to learn. I don't know that I would do that, but again, seek wisdom from above. Mm.
When in doubt.
When in doubt, that's right.
Finally here, last question. What books would you recommend for our children to read for kids who really don't know what their vision is?
Okay, one of the things, well, depending on the age, of course, of the child, but there are some books. In fact, my wife is developing, as we speak, she's developing a little curriculum that she's going to be giving on children and business, and she's come up with a number of different books. And if you're interested in that, just send me an email, because she plans on taping it, recording it, and making that available. So that'll be children and business. But there's one called The Toothpaste King, I think is the name of it, and that's about a boy who starts making toothpaste and develops something. That would be a good one. I love the chapter out of Tom Sawyer about the fence, painting the fence. I've been accused of doing that quite often. The rest of Tom Sawyer, well, I don't know. You can take or leave, but that part is good. I do have some books here that I pulled out that I thought are very, very good for business, but they're probably for a little bit older. But, anything above 10 years old. Who Moved My Cheese by Spencer Johnson. That's a great book on just looking for opportunities. There's one called The Go-Giver, as opposed to The Go-Getter. It's called The Go-Giver. Again, great philosophy on how we should go out and serve others in business. The Go-Giver. Both of these are very easy reads. They're what they call, I think they call them business novels or something, but it's easy reads. Another one is called It's Not About You. It's Not About You. Again, also very good book for younger people. And then one that you could get somebody a little bit older, maybe in the early teens, to get. It's called 50 Success Classics. And it's a great one. And, of course, the one I mentioned earlier, which is The Magic of Thinking Big. Or The Magic of Thinking Big, yeah. Great, great book as well. So those are some of them. The Go-Giver, Who Moved My Cheese, It's Not About You, 50 Success Classics, and The Magic of Thinking Big.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, it's time to wrap up. I wish we could talk longer. Thank you so much, Dave, for taking the time out to join us tonight. What a blessing this has been.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I love this, and we need to raise this next generation, and we need to think long-term. Slow our life down. Let's take care of our kids.
And I'm going to give you one more chance here just to kind of summarize, or just give us a final word to take us out about kids and work.
God put Adam on in the garden and said, work, and it was blessed, and it was fun, and it was great. Get your child, help him, guide him through that whole process. Get him to the point where he loves work and he loves accomplishing things for God's glory, and you will have given him a gift which is far beyond anything else that you could possibly give him materially.
Thank you once again. All right, everyone, that music is a sign that this episode of Christian Heritage On Air is coming to a close. Once again, I want to thank our guest, Dave Tucker, for joining us on the program. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me be here.
You can find out more about Dave Tucker over at goalsforguys.com and all those other websites he mentioned. I want to encourage you to keep in touch with us with your feedback and comments over at ChristianHeritageOnAir.com. We're here to serve you as you move through your family discipleship and homeschool journey. Thank you to Danny for all of his expert behind-the-scenes work, and thanks to my wife, Carrie, here for helping me to multitask this evening. And thank you to everyone on the board for this fantastic opportunity to serve. So until next time, this is Dr. Thomas Lamar, and may God bless you as you diligently pass on a vibrant Christian heritage to your children for God's glory. Good night, everybody, and God bless. More information on this Christian Heritage program, find them on the internet at ChristianHeritageOnline.org. This program is produced by Christian Heritage Home Educators of Washington, copyright 2013.